I was surprised that you touched me like that. But there in your hand was a current of life I could hardly stand. I stayed still and I didn't imagine it. If I did, I'd have made some joke of it. It was strange how I could feel so sane, so plain when you're around. Colored rose and easy. Yeah, I could see it so simple, unsubtle, impossible, clearly and strange, far and as close as a mountain range. On the horizon, driving all day, there I was, so sane, so plain after everything. It broke the economy anyhow. The dollar was down, but my friends opened businesses. There were new children again. I didn't get married. I wasn't closing a family. And my dad was raising a child in Nairobi. She was three, now he told me. Gas stations are left in unnoticed, fucking everything. The light, the reflections, different languages, your expressions. Falling right into the sweet and the tender line between something that can and can never be. And just then an ambulance passed on the street, and you took my arm reflexively. That was the year I was 30. That was the year you were 31. That was the year that we lost all we won. That was the year I was 30. That was the year you were 31. That was that year. Now here, now here is another one.
That's the Weather Station with the song 30 from their 2017 self-titled fourth album. The Weather Station is the musical vehicle for Tamara Lindemann, and Tamara and her band will be headlining the Roots North Music Festival in downtown Orillia on Saturday, April the 27th. We're pleased to welcome Tamara Lindemann to Folk Roots Radio. It's great to have you join us today.
Hi.
So we started off with the song 30, the first single from your self-titled album, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I get the impression from that song there was a lot of sort of, you know, I checked out a few other interviews you've done, but it certainly seemed to be it was that coming of age to 30. Now, unfortunately, I passed 30 a long while ago, so it's kind of, I feel like saying to people, okay, don't worry, because it gets worse. You know, you get through 30. But did you really feel that was a big step to go through that, you know, that change?
It seemed like a big deal at the time, for sure. I mean, and that's what's so funny about turning 30 is it feels very hyped, but then you get there and really, then you realize your 30s are the best.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I certainly feel like I should go out there and say, make sure you enjoy them, because it'll be, won't be that long before you wonder where your 40s went and you're, you know, heading to the end of your 50s if I don't give too much of the game away.
Well, I think for women especially, there is something, even in modern day, I mean, there's something about 30, I think, you know, when I was in my 20s, I can't remember how many news reports told me that I needed to have children by the time I was 30, for example. So you feel a lot of that kind of pressure. So I think there is a bit more of a symbolic thing for 30 for women. But as I say, once I hit 30, it seemed like just not a big deal. And now my 30s are great. And I'm happier than I've ever been.
It's interesting you say that because I was reading an article this week that suggested that people actually are not really mature until they're around 30, which, you know, when you think about it, it's like, great. So then all of those things I did and all those bad decisions I made in my 20s are now understandable.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I would say I agree with that to a certain extent.
So you've made 4 albums. You're developing a great reputation as a songwriter. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, I'm really excited about the fact that you're coming to Orillia for this Roots North because they have some fabulous acts, and it really is kind of going to be like it's a celebration of the songwriter for that 2 nights for the main stage lineup at the festival this year. But I wanted to steer you back to the start because I think you grew up outside Shelburne in Ontario. Is that right?
I did. Yeah.
So tell me what it was like growing up, because, you know, I gather you started to sing when you were young and you were involved in youth choirs and what have you. But when did you actually start thinking about writing songs?
Yeah, that's interesting because when I was a child, I was really immersed in music. I played piano and I sang in choirs. And it's funny because I did write songs as a small child, and I don't have any record of what they were, but I remember being like, I'm writing a song, and that was something I did. And I actually performed one at a talent show that I wish I had record of once again. But then teenagehood happened, and it didn't even occur to me to write songs or to be a musician. I mean, there wasn't any music really happening at my high school. That music that was happening was all dudes. So it kind of passed out of my life, and then I moved to Toronto and started becoming a music fan, basically. I started going to shows, and I was really obsessed with music, and I basically woke up one morning and I was like, I'm going to do this. I don't know how, but I'm going to figure it out. And I made a record. It took me like 4 years, but I made a record at home on my computer. And I basically just like taught myself everything. Like I taught myself to play guitar, and I taught myself to record, taught myself to write songs, and just sort of like through force of will became a musician.
So was that the East EP, or was that when you actually brought out the line?
The line, the ECP was like a part of that, that record. It was just, I kind of put out a few songs because people told me that I should do that, so I did that, and then part of them, I think most of the songs wound up on the record, The Line.
Because I was interested to find out that you actually acted as well, and you were acting from like the age of 13, and I guess you must be very driven. I mean, would you describe that as being one of your personality traits?
You know, it's funny because I don't think it occurred to me that I was driven, but I've really realized that lately. That's what I am. That's that thing that keeps me pushing forward. Yep, I am.
So how do you feel the difference between, you know, acting and, you know, being up on stage or performing and, you know, on film and TV compared to getting up on stage and headlining a festival or, you know, a big show, you know, like, you know, going to Roots North, things like that? Do you feel anything similar between those two experiences?
No. I mean, I'd say that they're kind of polar opposites because when I was working in film and television, you know, I never had a lot of power. So, you know, it was really, you know, obedience was what was rewarded. You know, I had to say my lines and hit my marks. And, you know, my interpretation of the character nobody was really interested in that. I mean, it was very much a job of like trying to fit yourself into whatever box was sort of set up for you. Whereas music for me, I've always done what I wanted to do, and nobody's really ever told me what to do. So I have total dominion over it. And when I step out on stage, the hard thing about music is to be myself. You know, I'm trying to find a way to perform and to be myself. And that's pretty hard, and it's kind of the opposite of acting. I think really good actors find ways to be themselves while performing, but I don't think I was ever that good. So yeah, it's very different.
So you don't do any acting at all now? I think it was your mid-20s you stopped that?
Yeah, I stopped a few years ago. So yeah.
So when you decided to become the weather station, I'm always curious when people decide that, you know, they don't want to go on the stage as Tamara Lindemann, I'm going to go on the stage as the weather station. And, you know, the weather station is also a band. I know you play with other people, but I'm always curious as to why people say, well, I'm going to call myself this. What was your motivation there?
Well, I think it was the time, honestly. I mean, I think it was like 2005, probably, that I made up that name to put on MySpace. So at that time, where the scene was in Toronto, like, nobody played under their name. Like, it was sort of like a weird thing to do. Like, for me to put out a record as, like, Tamara Lindemann would have been so cheesy. So I just, without meaning to, kind of, everybody had a moniker, so I had one, too.
And you feel pretty comfortable with that now? I guess it stuck.
It did stick. I mean, there have been many times over the years that I've been like, I guess now I should start using my name, but there's always a reason why something's built up with the weather station. And as time goes on, I'm mostly just glad I didn't pick a dumb name. I'm glad it is at least managed to stand up to the test of time in a somewhat all right way.
And I guess there's always the possibility, being so creative, that in time you may end up developing other projects that might be more suitable to come out under your real name.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, the thing I like about the weather station is it's a bit open. So there've been several changes in sound for the weather station, and I like that it feels like a project instead of just me, which is nice.
Well, it's interesting you make that segue, because I did want to talk about the difference between your last album, which you produced yourself, I think in Montreal, right?
Yeah.
But the album before, Loyalty, you went to France to produce with Afi Jervin and Robbie Lakritz. And, you know, the interesting thing is often when, you know, particularly with Bahamas doing so well, you tend to think, well, people suddenly make the leap to start to work with people like that. They don't necessarily want to go back and, you know, work on them on things themselves unless they really want to actually, you know, have the control, have the dominion over everything you do. What was your motivation to come back and do it differently? Was it to really try and put down a mark of, this is where I am at this time?
Like, for this last record?
Yeah.
I mean, I felt really lucky to have worked with Afi and learned a lot from him and Robbie. But when it came to doing this record, I mean, Afi was actually involved in the beginning. And then it sort of became apparent that I had too clear of an idea for what I wanted to do to really entertain a collaboration. And with this past record, I just had this really clear idea and I just wanted to realize it. And AC was kind of the first to tell me that. He was like, you want to produce this record, so I think you should. And he was totally right. And it wound up being a really great experience for me to take the reins and just make the decisions and to embrace my own decisions as being the right ones, whether or not they were objectively right, but just make my own calls and end it there.
So over the years, you mentioned, you know, you started off with The Line being your determined first record. You went onto All of It Was Mine, which I think really started to put you on the map in 2011. Yeah. And then I certainly think 2014's What Am I Going to Do With Everything I Know, the EP that came out then, was absolutely fabulous.
Oh, thank you.
And then Loyalty. The interesting thing about the Weather Station album, though, is you describe it as your rock and roll record. And I think people could come to that and be expecting something completely different. But to you, you feel pretty clear that this is like what rock and roll means to you. Can you explain that a little bit?
Well, when I say that, it's slightly a joke. But, you know, I came at it from a totally different perspective, where I think Loyalty especially is like, it's a pure like vulnerability record. Like it's it gains its strength from how vulnerable and emotional it is. And the self-titled record came from a very different emotional space of, even though it's very lyrically vulnerable as well, it's coming from a spirit of kind of a bit of a devil may care attitude, and confidence is sort of the primary emotion that I was drawing from. So that's what I meant when I said my rock and roll record. I would talk about that a lot in recording, even though we weren't, you know, I mean, there are a lot of electric guitars on the record, but, you know, we weren't trying to rock hard. We were just trying to break the mold of what I had done before.
Yeah, I always think it's cool when I talk to artists and they explain their motivation behind what they do. There's also, I think that the self-titled album also, you know, taps into the angst of the age. I want to steer you back to the album just now with another mm-hmm. song, but you know, you've got tracks on there, you know, like 30, and you know, one of the things mm-hmm. that you are really known for is the way you put your lyrics together. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, one of the cool things I think about artists is when you can actually, you know, go to the album and read the lyrics, and if the lyrics stand alone by themselves, and yours quite clearly do, mm-hmm. Because of their, you know, their lyrical prose. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about how you go ahead and write a song?
I have a terrible process that makes no sense. I'm working on it now, but yeah, I mean, with that record especially, everything was sort of an improvisation. I just play, I'd put, you know, record everything that I sang, and I just sort of sing whatever came out of my mouth, and then almost like interpret it after the fact, and try to make sense of what I was trying to say. And all those songs were just these very long, drawn out processes of like there being reams and reams and reams of words, and trying to decide which ones went where to kind of try almost to tell a little bit of a story, but not really. So like my songs, I'm usually trying to express some sort of meaning. I'm usually trying to express an idea or a thought, and I will pull in, you know, real world things to try to express that. But the purpose is meaning, I guess. And yeah, I also do pay attention to how the words work. You know, I want all the lyrics to connect and to make sense as a whole thing. And I do pay special attention to how they sit on the page, how they read, because that's important to me. But yeah, I always want every lyric to make some sort of sense, even though the sense is like metaphorical and poetic, I guess.
Oh, very very poetic. I mean, gets back to that thing that, you know, these lyrics really do stand by themselves, which leads to the next question is, mm-hmm. are you ever going to write a book, or have you written a book or poetry? I mean, is that something you've done in the past?
I'd like to. I think that's sort of somewhere I'm going. I mean, I have been writing a book about lyrics, actually, and about like how lyrics work, but that's a bit my own vanity project. But I would like to write a book. I think that's like I imagine it as my future. But it is, songs have this ease in a way where they hem you in. Like, it's actually really difficult to write a song because you have to fit the words into the melody in the song. So you don't have free rein. You can't just put in anything. So I think if I was faced with an empty page and no song to guide me, it would be overwhelming at first.
Bearing in mind, we had the conversation about the rock and roll record. Mm-hmm. One of the things I always am fascinated about when people ask you about your influences, they mm-hmm. always seem left field as well. And I kind of wonder whether you're being a little playful there too, because, you know, when I listen to your music and the way you write, mm-hmm. I mean, I think of lyrical songwriters. Most naturally. And I'm curious as to which songwriters would be the people that you would say influenced you.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like everybody, I'm influenced by Bob Dylan and Leonard Cohen. I mean, they're kind of like the two guys that, you know, sort of are at the heap of the castle in very different ways. Like, I feel like Dylan is so, it's so nice to return to him as someone who just sort of, his lyrics are always surprising and always interesting. And then Leonard Cohen is like the master of economy and precision, and he's amazing. But, you know, honestly, like, some of my biggest influences coming up were people in Toronto, like people that I know personally. Like, I was really into the Constantines lyrically. This guy, Stephen Lamke, who is a friend of mine who was in the Constantines, his lyrics affected me. This guy, like Richard Laviolette. There was a ton of records.
Oh, I love Richard Laviolette. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Wonderful lyricist.
Oh, well, just wonderful conversation with Richard as well. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. There was a lot of people within the Toronto music scene who I was affected by. I mean, Jennifer Castle, even. Mm-hmm. This guy, Ryan Driver, like Alex Lushevsky. There was a crazy, Sandro Perry. There was a crazy bunch of amazing lyricists kind of around playing as I was learning how to write songs. So those are the people that influenced me the most. I mean, I don't think I really sat down and listened to Bob Dylan with the same depth as I did, you know, the Constantines, for example. So, you know, those people were some of my biggest influences. And lately I've been getting more into like song craft as an idea, and so I've been listening to a lot of like country music and stuff like that, and sort of admiring that lyricism, which is very different than what I do.
So you've not mentioned Joni Mitchell's name. I've got to, you know, ask whether, you know, it's almost like, okay, we'll stay away from even, you know, talking about Joni, because, you know, she's someone, obviously, you know, if you look at the way her career changed and progressed,
yeah,
there are certain similarities in the way that you approach your career. I mean,
yeah.
Do you think about Joni as an influence at all?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Joni just sort of looms large. Like, I can't really escape her influence. And, you know, it's funny, like, when I was in my early 20s, I actually, like, really disliked, like, I vehemently disliked Joni Mitchell. It seemed so, everything I didn't like. It was so funny. And, but I think that's in part because it's just, like, I can't, when I open my mouth, like, people have been telling me I sound like Joni Mitchell since, like, I was a teenager, right? So I can't escape it. I mean, I think she's a genius, and like, I really love like Court and Spark and Hijira in particular. Those are probably my two favorite Joni records. But it's so funny. I mean, it's so funny when you just are like a thing, like the self-titled, like I couldn't believe that people were still comparing it to Joni Mitchell. And then I was in a cab somewhere and I heard a song and I was like, oh, that's what, it totally sounds like Joni Mitchell. I just didn't get it at the time that it did. I just, I felt like I was trying not to sound like Joni Mitchell, but I still did. I think it's just my voice and like having more words in the song than like baby, you know, like she's very wordy in the way that she sings. So there's that. And then just like being a soprano singer, like having a high voice. And using the way that she uses melody, you know, like I have the same instinct to use melody because I'm not a very good guitar player. So I want to use what I got. But yeah, it's interesting. I mean, yeah, like she's not my favorite like lyricist in all these certain ways, but she's also amazing and has paved the way for so many people to come along.
Well, it's great. Yeah. I feel so much better having had that conversation with you because it's almost feels a bit like the elephant in the room if you don't bring it up.
No, I know. Yeah.
But at the same time, the way that you write and, you know, the way that your lyrics kind of flow. And mm-hmm. I read something that you said that often you end up with more lyrics than you can possibly sing.
Yeah. Way more. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I get off on being able to talk to creative people, and that's why I'm so much enjoying this conversation just now, because it really comes through. And I do encourage everybody who's enjoying the Weather Station, if they're not already doing it, and probably mm-hmm. most people are, really check out the lyrics. Go to the website at theweatherstation.net, and you can check out the lyrics for the next song, which is Complicit, mm-hmm. which is a very interesting song because I guess we're all complicit. But I wanted to give you a chance to talk about the motivation behind writing this one.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd been wanting to write about climate change somehow, and I couldn't figure out how to approach it, you know, like, because I think it's so complicated. And, you know, like everything else, I've ever been trapped of how do I write it? How do I write about something? You know, you have all these expectations about how you should write about something, and then one day you just start writing about how you actually feel. So I just found myself writing about all my frustrations and darkest feelings about climate change and like where the world is today. And you know, and at the time I wasn't politically active at all and wasn't doing anything about it, and I just wrote about this sort of feeling of being trapped, and the song doesn't have any solution in it, which is okay because that's how I felt at the time. But I just sort of put in a lot of separate moments within that feeling.
It's a great song, and I have to say it really captures that feeling that, you know, we all know something needs to be done about some of the things that are going on, but mm-hmm. then there are other times when all you can do is, you know, is to hug someone you're with, and you know, because it's almost overwhelming. We have to do something, and I guess it's when the moment comes when you realize you have to do something, then that's the time to get up and do it. Let's listen to that song just now. This is The Weather Station. with Complicit from the self-titled album. You're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall.
You couldn't stand it these days, your sensitivity. The city felt oppressive, the heat and the noise. And even at home you felt every unspoken voice. I don't know how, but I tell you, you'll be fine. And I set the table, and you pour the wine. Oh, always have been capable, always have been kind. It isn't really your fault, just the tenor of the time. Job and lost it, and they never told you why. And you can't seem to get past it, this ordinary lie. And they're saying the summer is the worst it's ever been, with the radio on. And they're talking, and now they're shooting floods creeping in the lowlands, and everybody's shouting. And I just told your head, then I say nothing at all. Swallows, delicate in their flight. I trail my hand over the water of the familiar riverside. 4 hours in such silence, I lay beside, terrified for no one in my time. For all the parts per million, for unstoppable desire. Oh, how can you get over it? Knowing all you know, all the facts and the figures, you learn here as I go.
That's the Weather Station with Complicit from their 2017 album of the same name. Tamara Lindemann from the Weather Station is our special guest on Folk Roots Radio today. We're chatting about her music. So I always have to ask the question, what happens next? You sound like you're always thinking about different things that you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
New album, you starting to think about that?
Yeah. I mean, I have some dates actually in April that I'm going to get started on it. And I'm actually might try to make two records because I have in the past songwriting has been so kind of dysfunctional for me that I've gone into the studio with only 14 songs or so. And this year I kind of figured out my process better and I have way too many songs, which is the first time that's ever happened. So yeah, I'm feeling pretty positive about making some new music and being home for a while because I toured a lot on the last record. So now that I'm home, I have time to write, which is really nice. And yeah, that's what I'm up to.
When you say two records, does that mean this will be two records with distinct flavors?
I think so, yeah. It feels like two different records from each other. So we'll see what happens.
That sounds very exciting. I have to say that sounds wonderful. So you're going to be playing at Roots North on Saturday, April the 27th. That's in downtown Orillia. Can we talk a little bit about the live experience?
Sure.
What can people expect when they come to a Weather Station show?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's interesting because for the, you know, the tour of the self-titled record, you know, I had a band and it sort of did become a bit of a rock and roll band. It got kind of loud and I played electric guitar. But, you know, that touring cycle is over and this is sort of a one-off show kind of existing in its own space. So I think I'm going to do quite a few things. I heard there was a piano in the space and it was a seated theater. So I'm going to play some new songs, some quieter songs. I'm going to sort of do a bit of more of an overview of some of my earlier work and then some of the rock and roll, not rock and roll, but some of the songs from the self-titled album and perhaps some new songs. So it'll be a bit more of a songwriter show than it's been for the last year and a half.
So it's going to be a solo show?
No, I'm going to bring a band, but it's not going to be the same band as was touring with me for the last year and a half.
Well, the St. Paul Center is a beautiful venue, so I'm sure it's going to be a wonderful space, as you say, for a songwriter showcase.
Mm-hmm.
You're also, I think, going to head down to Canso, Nova Scotia in the summer to play the Stan Rogers.
I am,
Folk Festival. You must be pretty excited about that.
Yeah, I am. You know, I'm a big fan of Stan Rogers. And it's funny as we're talking about Orillia because I just read Gordon Lightfoot's biography. I feel like Lightfoot and Stan Rogers and all these sort of Canadian folkies are like, in this funny way, part of my heritage that I can't escape, and in the best way. So I'm excited to play the Stan Rogers Fest. I'm stoked about that.
I should have asked you when you were mentioning the two albums that you're producing. You know, we're all adjusting to this new world where streaming seems to be, dare I say, trying to take over everything, including radio. But, you know, those of us who have been doing radio for a while will continue doing it until we drop. But I'm always curious when I talk to a performer who says, well, you know, I'm going to make two albums. You don't think streaming impacts your ability to put out your art in an album format rather than focusing just on the songs?
You know, I think I still kind of exist in a different, my world isn't fully the modern world in that, you know, my label in the States is their audience is record collectors, for example. So people still buy my albums and consider them as albums. I mean, I think my fans tend to be many different ages, actually, all over the world. It's I'm not like the latest. I'm not only existing in the new buzz band youth world. So I think for young, you know, if you're like a young pop singer, then yeah, you don't need to make a record. But for me, I'm still existing in a world where people are listening to the records as a whole, and I am also. So, yeah.
I was going to say, it sounds like there's an old soul within that 30-plus-year-old body.
Yes. I don't feel like I'm completely in the modern era. But luckily, I think a lot of people feel that way also, so I'm not alone.
No, that's great. It's been wonderful to talk to you today. We've got one thing left to do, and that's pick the final song to play. I thought we would play Impossible from the self-titled album. Tell us a little bit about this song.
I've been thinking a lot about the theme of this last record versus what I'm writing now. I feel like, you know, in playing the song Complicit, I feel like the last record was sort of my attempt to become comfortable in the world as it is. You know, I mean, Impossible, I was thinking of sort of all these various situations that seem impossible and how I just got used to them at a certain point and how interesting that sort of aspect is. Human nature is, you know, to get used to the impossible, something you thought you could never deal with, and then you can. But I feel like I now feel very differently about a lot of these things, where I feel like it's, you know, in talking about climate change, you know, it's interesting. I've been thinking a lot more about how actually we shouldn't get used to the impossible in a lot of ways, and how that that's something I'm actually fighting back with against in my life now. But this song is from the zenith of getting used to the impossible. Though I guess in the song it's slightly sarcastic, perhaps. I could say that that maybe it wasn't all right to be used to the impossible, if that makes sense.
I think it makes a lot of sense. I love the way that you're honest about, you know, that, you know, your lyrics have depth. They're certainly not trite. And mm-hmm. and they express, I think, a lot of the feelings that we all have, that, you know, life is complicated. You know, we have to work our way through. Tamara Lindemann, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you today. This is The Weather Station with the song Impossible from their self-titled 2017 album. You're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall. And thanks again.
Thank you.
To wake itself.